And speaking about the media brings us to the question, where do you get your information and how different is that from how you got news a few years ago? Do you think much about the source or, for that matter, about the delivery method that gets news to you? These are questions that circulate frequently these days, and we take up a monthly discussion of topics in the media with media defined very broadly in our Signals and Noise segment. Andrew Gay from the Communications Faculty of Southern Oregon University is a regular. Good to see you back, Andrew.
Thank you for having me.
And this month he's joined by Chris Lucas, also from the Communications Faculty. Chris, good to see you in here again.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, you know, this is a real indication of what goes on in the media these days, that things change so incredibly fast. The idea of waiting for the evening news at the end of the working day to get your major information or to get your stuff out of the morning paper the next morning is so completely dead that you and I, Andrew Gay, were actually discussing topics for this segment just before it started.
Indeed.
And there is, in fact, a new wrinkle this morning on the story about the widow, one of the widows of a soldier killed in Niger, and whether or not Donald Trump called the soldier's widow and said the correct pleasant things. And the widow appeared this morning on Good Morning America, is that right?
Right. Maisha Johnson, I hope I'm pronouncing her first name correctly, the widow of Sergeant LaDavid Johnson. It was on Good Morning America this morning, and it was a short interview, only about 6.5 minutes long, but it was very compelling. She really wants to know what happened to her husband. She hasn't been given much information. She backed up the accounts reported by Congresswoman Williams, and also said that that the president has been mischaracterizing the conversation.
Well, you know, it gets us to a zone where there's a constant level of sort of he said, she said in the media, and people doubting that people said things that they assure other people that they have said.
Right. And of course, in this case, we have, when the criticism was first made of Donald Trump, he said, I have proof that that's not true. No proof has been produced. But Ms. Johnson, as she reported on Good Morning America this morning, had, I think, 5 witnesses in the car. The phone was on speaker. She was too upset to hold the phone. And so there were multiple people listened to this conversation in the car, which I think was, you know, her right. There's chief of staff kind of criticized in a way he was criticizing the congresswoman, but perhaps indirectly the widow for making what should have been a private conversation somewhat public by allowing others to listen in. But of course, you know, she was on the way to a viewing. She had her family and a congresswoman who is very close to the family in the car with her.
Frederica Wilson of Florida.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
I think what really surprises a lot of us is the degree to which we keep hitting these stories that seem to show a real lack of competence and just communication out of this administration. Right. I mean, they're really reactive. The story was really not much of a story until the president, in responding to a kind of quick give and take with the press, made some statements that seemed pretty transparently unlikely. And then people start digging and asking questions, and then there's this doubling down, and then we're into this he said, she said dynamic, which I think really plays into who has the biggest platform, which is the president.
Well, and this gets into the whole issue, though, of instead of people having conversations to each other, they have conversations more or less at each other through the media. You look at the way in which the lines of communication go in this, and it is not between White House and widow. There is some of that as well, but then there's White House, widow, congress member, major media, Twitter, all that stuff, and it becomes much more of a, not even a triangle, more of a rectangle, trapezoid, I don't know,
right.
Hexagon.
Well, I think, you know, again, I think Chris is 100% right that in a past White House, it never would have gotten this far, I think, of any administration, that, you know, it's as simple as saying, oh, we're so sorry that this is the way she read the call. That was not the intention. We are, you know, we're deeply sorry that we caused her pain. It's apologizing. It's recognizing that even if we did not intend this interaction to go this way, obviously it was read that way by someone who's in grief. Let's just acknowledge that, accept it, and move forward. This is an administration that refuses to ever acknowledge that maybe they messed up in some way.
Well, let's bring this back to a media angle, though, because this is purportedly when signals and noises, right? Obviously, media segments can turn into political segments pretty easily. But to bring it back to the media, there is this recent poll with Politico and Morning Consult that shows that 46% of Americans believe the mainstream media tell lies about President Trump. I mean, many more Republicans than Democrats, not surprisingly, but still, I mean, that's a fairly shocking number that on average across all parts of the political spectrum, 46% believe, I mean, nearly half the country believes the media tell lies about the president.
Right. And there's David Corn, I think, is a reporter with Mother Jones. After this morning's interview, talked about how he was at the airport and someone at the airport was saying, oh, this widow is lying. And he said, well, how do you know? And he said, because they already released the tapes. And he said, no, they haven't. And he said, yeah, it's all over the internet. And I think there's both, you know, people want simply believe whatever their side is yelling the loudest in many ways. I think that you have, again, the president is very adept at making every conversation about whether or not the media is lying about him. And his supporters certainly believe that. And of course, we also have cases where the media has made mistakes. And, you know, most of the
which
time.
Which is not the same thing as lying,
right,
I should point out. But,
right.
But.
And most of the times, I think we can say that most responsible media outlets, when they make a mistake, they make a correction, they take steps to make that right. But oftentimes, you know, that. You know, what you can see on Twitter is, right, an accusation or a claim gets made that fits your view of the world, and that gets retweeted, you know, maybe, you know, 10,000 times, and then a correction comes out and that gets retweeted 1,000 times. And so, you know, oftentimes people, even when a responsible media outlet is trying to make things right, people don't really want to see the correction. They want to see the thing that kind of confirmed their belief.
I think one of the little challenges of this, and something we talk about in class here a lot, is the use of the term media, right, which at this point covers such a wide gamut of types of communication, mass communication, niche communication. And I think it's even harder these days for us as citizens, as just sort of members of the society, to sort of sort out, like, what is, when you see it, something come flying across your Facebook feed, is that media? You know, is it, you know, what are the dividing lines between journalism, commentary, analysis, editorial, conspiracy? Like, it's all very jumbled up, and it's especially difficult, I think, for young people who, this is really, you know, you talked about the network news earlier, but people don't watch the network news that much anymore, right? It's the ratings are very low, the audience skews older. Mm-hmm. So the question of not really having this kind of centralized, credible, sort of the consensus around what credibility means in this environment is in many ways a kind of opportunity for people to, if there is something that's sort of hot or confusing, to jump in and muddy the waters.
Chris Lucas and Andrew Gay are guests on the Jefferson Exchange from the Communications Faculty at Southern Oregon University. This is our monthly Signals and Noise segment about events in the media. You can join us at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. But let me follow up what you were just saying, Krista, because it gets back to what Andrew was saying about responsible media outlets. How do you know? Honestly, I mean, because this is an age where you don't need a printing press. You don't need to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on material to print mm-hmm. something or to start a broadcast facility. You've got a phone and a Facebook account, and you can reach the entire world. And so how do people, I got this into myself the other day because there was some, I think it was the discussion of Bernie Sanders and the dust up about him being one of the major speakers at a feminist conference coming up. And some feminists are up in arms that a guy is addressing the feminism conference. And I was trying to look for a place that would give me some of the roots of this discussion. I was ending up in websites I didn't know mm-hmm. and was trying to gauge where they're coming from. And for somebody who doesn't think perhaps as critically as I do after 35 years of getting jaundiced by the media mm-hmm. business, I don't know how people would figure out who is a responsible viewpoint and isn't. And I wonder what you say to your students about that.
Well, you know, I really rest on professionalism, you know, as one of the tools, like judging what does professional journalism look like, being critical readers, which is, you know, in this day and age where we're all very rushed around and responding to things in the moment, it's hard to kind of slow down and say, well, does this story, is it citing anonymous sources? Do I you know, what do those sources seem to know, and do they seem to be coming from a particular point of view? Are these stories doing their own journalism, or are they referencing other journalism? Mm-hmm. Is the premise of the story built on a pretty flimsy, you know, initial premise? I was just amazed in the aftermath of the shooting in Las Vegas, right? I mean, within hours, there were stories floating around about both misidentifying the shooter, right? Mm-hmm. But then in the stories that you saw coming out, the stories that really were getting a lot of traction online, they misidentified the shooter, but took that as the premise to then go into the political claim, right, that he was a left-leaning right, person, right, and so forth. So the actual question of who the shooter was only hours after, right, was completely in the dust at that point.
And it starts the thundering of course that person felt this way, but, you know.
Right, so it's just, I think, important to be aware of how news stories look and should look in order to be credible.
Yeah, I'm a Tom Petty fan, and so that, you know, the day that Tom Petty passed away, you know, the news was back and forth all day long.
And
Tom Petty's
CBS
dead.
News
Tom Petty's
it, yeah.
not dead.
Yeah.
Tom Petty's, and so, you know, even something as innocuous, seemingly innocuous as a rock star, whether or not they were alive, creates doubt in the media, or doubt within the audience of, you know, can I trust the media? They can't even figure out if Tom Petty's alive or not. And I, excuse me. So I think it's, you know, for me, I really tell students to have a diverse media diet. I think that's really important. I think citizen journalism is important. I think independent media is important. I also think it's important to have, you know, these sort of corporate behemoths who have, you know, a lot of editorial checks and balances that they're trying to make sure that nothing is going out there that's wrong. You know, and that screws up. I mean, we have this story about Harvey Weinstein and the fact that Ronan Farrow began that work under NBC News, and then NBC News didn't want to touch it. And we've heard some conflicting reports as to why they passed on this story.
And it ended up in The New Yorker instead.
Exactly.
And actually came out after the New York Times piece on Weinstein. Yeah, so interesting how that story moved through. Well, let's go a little more directly to the Weinstein versus Bill O'Reilly thing and the constant flinging of the charge of hypocrisy. It's like, well, you complain so much about Bill O'Reilly, and then you put up with Harvey Weinstein all these years. I mean, that ends up being more of a left-right thing than a media thing, doesn't it?
I mean, to me, it's an absurd thing. When I see people making sexual harassment and sexual predators into a, you know, political game, it's ridiculous to me. It's insulting to me. I think one thing we can, I think, agree on that the evidence shows is that the media industry, and that includes an entertainment industry, but any kind of powerful media organization has a problem with sexism, has a problem with misogyny, has a problem with not trusting the voices of women as much as the voices of powerful men. And so I think that's the problem that we should be talking about. We should be talking about the fact that, you know, Harvey Weinstein's contract with his company had a window for him to settle all these claims, and that Bill O'Reilly settled this with $32 million claim, yeah, and then got a contract renewal
after that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's clear that powerful media organizations are covering up for the very bad behavior of men. And I think that's the bigger conversation.
Which I would sort of hasten to add, people have been talking about for years,
yeah,
right? It has been much remarked on, and there are, you know, years of studies talking about how the failure of the industry to make room for women to kind of come into positions of leadership, and you know, that's really been established. So I think the fact that entertainment is having these issues is not a surprise to people who've really been paying attention.
But not just in entertainment too. I mean, you look at politics and other businesses, and people will pull it up with a lot. If a person is bringing in votes, bringing in money, you know, making a splash in whatever way, a lot gets looked the other way.
I mean, it was about a year, almost exactly, when this story really broke out from the Access Hollywood tape with President Trump. So, you know.
What Steve Bannon refers to as Billy Bush weekend, I understand. We have a call here from Jamie in Medford. Welcome to Signals and Noise with Andrew Gay and Chris Lucas.
Good morning, Jeffrey.
Howdy.
First of all, this is a fake call-in, so don't take anything I have to say seriously.
All right.
And thank you for laughing, because it was meant to be a joke. A couple of random thoughts, guys. One, this administration demonstrates what Orwell was trying to tell us against, to warn us against. And secondly, Stephen Colbert, when he had his show on Comedy Central, he played a demagogic right-wing, supposedly, guy. And I liked his term, truthiness. Truthiness rings a bell nowadays, and I don't think it's funny anymore. And that's about all I had to say, Jeffrey.
All right. Thanks for those thoughts. I appreciate hearing from you, Jamie. So Orwell and truthiness, what do you guys think of either of those?
Well, I mean, the concept that Colbert was getting at, some time ago, and it still does resonate, is that, you know, it doesn't matter whether something is true or not. If it sounds like the truth and it's a big enough lie that you want to believe it, I think is kind of what we're getting at. And I think we have seen a lot of that kind of thing. You know, we've seen the media strategy from the White House, especially the president's Twitter account, being if I keep retweeting the same claim over and over and over again, regardless of if it has been fact-checked and debunked, people will believe it to be true. And that seems to be the media strategy.
Was it Orwell who said a lie repeated often enough becomes the truth?
Or something, he should have if he didn't say that. But
it sounds Orwellian.
I think the Orwell observation is really well taken. I also often think of Hannah Arendt, right, and her, I'm going to have to paraphrase this, but, you know, the idea that what's really necessary for authoritarian, you know, power to take root isn't even a lie, right, so much as it is just mass confusion about what the truth is.
Uh-huh.
And that I really, that's really been on my mind a lot recently, because we have so much information that we really are having trouble digging out where the truth is out there.
I fully understand. In fact, I was thinking as Andrew was talking about Bill Maher, and he does an occasional segment on his show on HBO where he says, well, I don't know for a fact that it's correct. I just know it's true. And then he goes on to list some things that you know, seem outrageous on their face, but, you know, it's the kinds of things that people say. And honestly, some people do succeed, it seems like, when the waters are muddied and you doubt, in fact, what the truth is.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's, in this day and age, when, you know, we're getting information from so many sources and it's so hard to assess, that kind of doubt creates space for people who seem very full of conviction and have power to work their will.
We have another email here. This is from Ned in Phoenix. He says, just look at Good Morning America, where you have a former football player, a former basketball player, and that leaves George Stephanopoulos with any real experience, and he has a degree in theology. Also, due to the fast pace, good editing is almost impossible. So there's that. Let me take another call here from Paul in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange and Signals and Noise.
Hi, guys. First of all, it was Joseph Goebbels who said, a lie told 1,000 times becomes the truth.
All right, so the Nazi propaganda chief. Okay.
Yeah,
great.
Hitler,
thank you,
Hitler's propagandist. Also, every war that we've been drawn into from the Spanish-American War forward has been based upon false news reporting and false propaganda. If the elite want us to move in, the herd to move in a direction, they just pull out the dog whistle and away we go. That's my comment. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for that, Paul. Appreciate it. Final thoughts from you guys before we head to your pick threes?
Profound thoughts.
Well, I do think it's really, you know, I think it's important for us to think about the interests of the people in power, especially around things like wartime, and that, you know, one of our, I think, gravest responsibilities as citizens is to be, you know, very, very, you know, very conscious and wary about the threat of war, and read twice if that seems like where we're going.
Right. Yeah. Look, check multiple sources. Yeah. Don't just take the places that you usually go. Look at a couple of others, I would say, and just, you know, see what the rest of the
world
is. And
get outside your silo, right?
Yeah. Yes,
you know,
exactly.
Follow some sources, some newspapers, some magazines where, like, 50% of the time, you're like, I don't believe that at all, but if it's a credible source.
Yeah, if you're not getting angry while reading the news, then you're reading too much of stuff that just kind of aligns with what you think. You should get angry occasionally.
Well, yeah, but the thing is that there's the whole anger industry, you know, make the left angry, make the right angry. So if you're left and you want to know what the right's talking about, go to the sites that make the right wing angry, and vice versa. So let's go to your pick threes and three items in the media that you are consuming and enjoying of late.
Well, I will mention first the Ashland Literary Arts Festival. this weekend. Director Alex Cox is going to be screening his film Walker, and I'm going to be on a panel for that. Mm-hmm. I have two Netflix TV series, one that I've just finished watching and one that comes out this week. The one that comes out this week is Stranger Things 2, Season mm-hmm. 2. I loved the first Stranger Things. Just a fun sort of adventure story in the vein of old Spielberg films. Mm-hmm. And then I just completed Mindhunter which David Fincher produced and directed many of the episodes, who is, of course, Ashlyn hometown hero. Really kind of a compelling piece, well aligned with the times of the whole sort of Me Too situation.
Okay, Ashlyn Literary Festival and Stranger Things and Mindhunter from Netflix. And Chris, how about you, Chris?
All right, well, that was going to be two of us from Mindhunter, so I'll have to improvise here. But I've been catching up with a podcast that's about a year old, but it's pretty probably pretty nerdy, but it's called First Mondays, and it's all about the Supreme Court.
Ah.
And they sort of do these weekly updates on what's going on. And it's not just about this cases, but the culture and the people who work around there and what's going on inside.
And who produces that?
It's a pair of independent guys. One's a law professor, mm-hmm. and the other is actually a former clerk for Scalia. So there's kind of an interesting mix of voices. Yeah. There's an interesting show on Netflix now called Lore, which is actually based on a podcast and kind of an attempt to bring with animation and recreation stuff, all these stories, kind of urban legends and just kind of powerful mythological stories we have floating mm-hmm. around our culture from centuries past. And it's pretty fun. It's kind of creepy for Halloween. And I also just want to kind of give a shout out to the show Queen Sugar, because this is a really amazing series by Ava DuVernay, who directed Selma a couple years ago.
DuVernay, yeah.
Yeah. But she's doing it just to kind of come back to this point about women in the media. They made this is a show that's on Oprah Winfrey Network, and they made a decision early on to only hire women directors on that show. So they're really providing a pathway into the industry for talented women.
Okay, two votes for Mindhunter I see here, though, so we'll have to go with that. Okay, Chris Lucas, good to see you. And Andrew Gay, thanks for joining us,
Thank
as
you.
Always, on our Signals and Noise segment on Jefferson Public Radio's Jefferson Exchange.